Hi, Marty Lurie here. John Miller, the Hall of Famer. Boy, Cooperstown weekend, always a special time for me. I love the weekend. I love the stories of the game, the history of the game, and celebrate in Cooperstown. And John, this weekend, we've got Tim Raines going in, Jeff Bagwell going in, and, of course, Pudge Rodriguez. Three great players. I thought it'd be great to get your recollections of each as they become Hall of Famers.
Well, Tim Raines, it was so difficult to understand why it was taking so long to get him in. Ricky Henderson was recognized early on, right away. And Tim Raines was Ricky Henderson in the National League and really, for most of that time, a contemporary of Ricky. And maybe because he played in Montreal, maybe because his best years were in Montreal, he didn't get the notoriety. But great base stealer, and he didn't break any all-time records the way Ricky did, but his percentage was even better than Ricky's most of that time. He was a high on-base percentage guy, and unlike Ricky, he was also a switch hitter and a pretty good bunter. So I think that Tim Raines was a dynamic presence, and, you know, he had some drug problems that came to light at one point, and maybe that soured some of the voters on him for a while. Whatever it was, I'm very happy to see that he's in there. And Tim Raines, one of the best leadoff men in the history of the game.
Yeah. And he played on an Expos team. He had some good players on that team. Those Expos teams, early 80s, mid 80s, they were good teams.
They were real strong, and those are the teams that had Dawson and Ellis Valentine. I mean, they had an outfield with guys with some of the best arms in the game, and they had two guys. I mean, usually a team maybe has one guy who's got the spectacular arm. They had two guys at the same time who also had power, who also were RBI guys. Tim Wallach was on that team. He was a power guy. That was a really good ball club, and he was the guy who really ignited him at the top. So Tim Raines, I'm very happy for him, and he is a guy who stayed in the game. He's been a coach, and a good one. He's been teaching the game to the next generation, which used to be sort of an old baseball tradition. And maybe because the money's so big now, there's no need for guys to stay in the game or whatever it is, but he has followed that sort of old school tradition, and he's been passing along that knowledge.
All right, great to have Tim Raines going in, and great to have John here, of course, describing it. Jeff Bagwell, famous trade. Larry Anderson, now a broadcaster with the Phillies, went to Boston. Jeff Bagwell went to Houston, a heralded young man, I think even a third baseman in those days. I think they switched position. I think Art Howe made him a first baseman. But Jeff Bagwell, unique batting stance. My goodness, Jeff Bagwell, Hall of Famer.
The Red Sox needed a relief pitcher. They were in a stretch run, and they had this guy Bagwell, who'd hit, what, four home runs in Triple-A that year? So he didn't, and he wasn't a big guy, wasn't a tall guy, a big home run hitting looking guy, but the Astros wanted him, and Larry Anderson, who's now a very popular broadcaster in Philadelphia, not in Boston. I don't think he was ever going to be popular in Boston with the way that trade worked out, but he left Fenway Park, which, when you looked at it, it would have been perfect for him. And he became a power hitter at the Astrodome, which was sort of the opposite end of the spectrum from Fenway. That was a graveyard for home run hitters. And yet he hit all these home runs. You wondered, man, how many would he have hit if he'd gotten traded to a real hitter's ballpark? Instead, he went to one of the worst hitter's ballparks, the Astrodome. But then that became part of a storied Astros team. He teamed up with Craig Biggio and the Killer Bees, and those guys are both in the Hall of Fame right now, and they led those Astros teams. They were a perennial contender year after year. They didn't ever go deep into the postseason. It seemed like every year they'd get into the postseason and they'd have to face the Atlanta Braves right away. And are we going to face Maddox again? Who's that lefty going tomorrow? Oh, Glavin, yeah. Man, bummer, dude. And usually, I don't think they even won a game. They'd get swept. So I remember even one of the years, Randy Johnson was near the end of a contract with the Seattle Mariners. And right at the deadline, it was the Astros that acquired him. And Johnson, the big unit. So that was really exciting because they had a lot of other good pitchers. They had Billy Wagner in the bullpen. And you thought, well, this is going to be the year. And still, the Braves got the best of them. So, and I think the Braves had guys, and they got kind of a bad rap because they often didn't get to the World Series and only won that World Series one time. But in baseball, there are so many things that are involved in getting all the way through to the World Series. If you get to the World Series, then you had a fabulous year. It's just a little extra gravy if you actually win the World Series. And I think people don't understand that. They get used to the Super Bowl and the NBA playoffs. Well, you put the same team out there every day. Baseball, it's a whole different story based on who's pitching that day. And the Braves were built for the regular season, the grind, a great rotation. And, usually it was like a team like the Yankees that was built for October. Never giving up a lead. Great bullpen. And the Braves, their bullpen was never that great. And what did you need a great bullpen for when you had starting pitchers like they did? Well, in October, you needed the great bullpen. So, the Astros were always sort of the sacrificial lamb. But I'm happy for Bagwell and he and Biggio. And you always thought they were so close because they were together on those outstanding teams all those years. And really, I came to realize, I don't know if they're close or not. They might have been close in the clubhouse or whatever, but entirely different personalities, that's for sure.
John, before we leave Bagwell, his batting stance, it was very unusual. And you think of Musial and Mays and McCovey and all the great hitters. And like Ripken, you saw a batting stance every night from Ripken. But Bagwell almost had that sitting down batting stance. Very unusual.
Yeah, the main problem with it is that he was not able to always get out of the way of the inside pitch. And the one year he was having this monster year, and then he got hit, and I think he broke his wrist or broke a bone in his hand, whatever it was. And then about a week later, we had the baseball strike, 1994. And so his numbers were gigantic. And I think it was the same year Matt Williams was on pace for 63, 64 home runs that same year. And we never found out if he was going to get there or not, which is a shame. But we know Bagwell was not going to because he got hurt. And then he started, I can't see that stance without thinking about all the armor that he started wearing. And he needed it because, and he would get hit a lot. That was a big part of it. He would get a lot of walks, a lot of hit by pitches, always had a high on base percentage. And then at some point, he hurt his arm, and he really couldn't throw. So it was ironic that he was a third baseman when he was coming up, because even as a first baseman, now he really could not throw.
All right, Pudge Rodriguez, and I think of Al Lopez and Gary Carter and all the Bob Boone and all the people who had all the longevity records, and Pudge Rodriguez, he was one of those guys that just seemed to catch every day.
And I guess now the closest guy to him in terms of his game and how he would be in there every day would be Yadier Molina. He had a great arm. And I remember there was a game in Texas. I went in there for a national telecast on a Sunday night. And I got to the ballpark and saw the final out on the Saturday night game. And John Wetland was on the mound. And Wetland was not necessarily that good at holding base dealers. The Rangers had a one-run lead and a base dealer at first base. And Johnny Oates was the manager, the late Johnny Oates. And he told me that they had said, forget about that guy. Don't waste even a moment worrying about him. Get this hitter out and the game will be over. Well, that being the case, there were no throws being made and the runner took off. And Pudge just, in the twinkling of an eye, was on his feet and making that throw, and he just threw a seed right there, right at the corner of the bag, and threw the guy out, and the game was over. And Johnny Oates said, I didn't even think about that. I was perfectly content to let them steal the bag, because Wetland was really good. And, okay, it doesn't matter if he steals the bag, he gets the hitter out. The game will be over anyway. Then he didn't have to get him out. Pudge did that. Pudge really changed every game that he was in. And the story I will never forget is when interleague play first started in 1998, the first interleague game, you know, first game by half an hour, was the Giants playing at Texas. And Darrell Hamilton was the Giants' leadoff man at that time, and he was telling all of his teammates about Pudge Rodriguez. And he says, hey, you've never seen anything like this guy. You start to get your secondary lead, and the next thing you know, you're out by 5 feet because he picks you off. You can't get back, so you just be very careful. And so in the first inning of the first interleague game, Darrell Hamilton gets on base. And sure enough, Pudge makes a pickoff throw, and Hamilton can't get back. He's diving back with his right hand, and then reaches around and tumbles over with his left hand, and he ended up being a safe. Will Clark couldn't tag him. He kept throwing the tag down, and he wasn't there anymore. And meanwhile, he gets back to bag, and he's somehow miraculously safe. And he gets up, dusts himself off, looks over in the Giants' dugout, and the whole team is laughing and waving towels at him. Is that what you're talking about? Don't let that happen. So the guy who actually knew about him got picked off, although it doesn't show that in the box score. But Pudge Rodriguez, you know, he got bigger and stronger and hit home runs. And, you know, I was surprised because there were a lot of people felt that in that era of the performance-enhancing drugs that he was doing some of that. But whatever. I think he's one of those guys that was so good for so long. And, you know, then he started hitting home runs and because he was not a big hitter at all at the beginning. But I think, you know, and he got some flack early on for not being that good at handling a pitching staff and so on and so forth. But I'm the same Johnny Oates, who managed him for several years there in Texas, said he changes the whole game because guys don't get the big secondary lead. Now there's a single to right, and those guys don't go to third, except the very fastest of the runners. So instead of first and third, you just have first and second, which changes everything in terms of the pitcher's ability to throw breaking balls in the dirt and so on and so forth. You know, Pudge was a huge presence, and teams would, he didn't have to shut down their running game. They just shut it down. You know, they did not attempt to steal against him. So, you know, and when they did, they regretted it. So I think he was one of the great catchers without question in the history of the game, and certainly deserves his spot in Cooperstown.
Well, the one moment I have, when it comes to mind, it's the tag at the plate on J.T. Snow and the throw from Conine. And it was a collision, and he took the brunt of that collision and held on to the ball, and that was the end of that series.
And, you know, you can do that now, as I understand it. If a guy has the ball and he's blocking the plate, then you can, you're free to go after him. And he had the ball quite some time before JT arrived, and JT, an old football player who grew up around football with his dad and being an NFL player, and he gave him his best shot, and Pudge held on to it. So one of the greatest moments in the history of that Marlins franchise, and Pudge kind of changed a couple of franchises, because when he went to Miami, you know, there's a large Hispanic population. You should go down there sometime, Marty. I think you'd like it in Miami. Yeah. Oh, you've been there before, have you? Yeah. For, what, 40, 50 years? Yeah. Anyway, a lot of players, hey, well, Pudge is there. Let's go down there. It's going to be a good team if he's there. And they really built an excellent team. And then later, after the Tigers had one of the worst seasons in history, they were threatening the Mets' all-time record for losses. They were, I think, 43 and 119. Ooh, what was that, 03 maybe? I mean, just a horrendous year. All-time worst year. Well, they probably overpaid to get Pudge there. But they thought that Pudge would help the young pitching and the rebuilding that they were trying to do. But also that, hey, here's an Hispanic guy who grew up in the Caribbean in warm weather. He's been playing in South Florida, and before that he played in Texas. And he's playing here in the North. So they thought maybe he could help them sign some other guys who maybe would not even consider Detroit. And that really, that happened. And I can't, some of the names escape me now, but he was the beginning of the rebirth of the Tigers as a franchise. And it wasn't that long, what was it, 3 years later, after the 119 losses, they won the American League pennant and were in the World Series with the Cardinals.
Boy, great to talk with you, John. Three worthy candidates who are wonderful to get your recollection of it. Pud Rodriguez, Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines, Hall of Famers. Describe their careers by the Hall of Famer. Nothing better than that, John. Thank you so much.
And I do want to say one other point about Bud Selig, the commissioner, goes in. And easy to give him grief and whatnot. But Bud Selig came in where baseball was in a bad place. Nobody, the owners not working together. Every owner looking at every other owner as an enemy. And somehow, he, behind the scenes, put everybody on the same page and has brought this era of prosperity and harmony to the game. It didn't used to be that way. Every 3 or 4 years when the contract was up, the labor contract was up, there was going to be a strike or a lockout. There was going to be bad blood. And he changed all of that. And it's an unprecedented era of, you know, the PAX C-League, maybe you'd call it. And I think that alone secured his spot in the Hall of Fame, and he deserves it.
John, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. All the best, Marty.
More coming up, KMBR 680, the sports leader.
Well, thank you.
Sorry if that.
No, you
cut that out.
You do this.